Way, way back in the 1980s, secret government employees dug up famous guys and ladies and made them using genetic copies. Now they're clones of sexy teens. Now they're gonna make it if they try. Loving, learning, sharing, charging. Time to laugh and shiver and cry.
This time on a very special Little Shows That Couldn't. We watched some Clone High, episodes 5 and 6. I'm your host, Brett Medill. With me, as always, co-host Sean Stewart.
Hello.
And we have a guest with us this week, as you can see, as you saw in the lineup. Miguel McKenna is here.
There was a lineup? I'm.
Well, whatever, you know, the audience has seen the title of the episode, right. And they've seen that it is Clone High 3 with Miguel McKenna.
Hello. Thank you for joining us.
That's Miguel. Oh,
thank you. Thank you for having me.
First time guest. Before we get into anything specifically about these episodes, like we're going to episodes 5 and 6 of Clone High.
Is that the plan?
That is the plan, of course.
Okay, cool.
What do you like the most about Clone High? What speaks to you, Miguel?
That's a good question.
It was kind of my first exposure to the whole late night cartoon thing. I would watch a lot of Teletoon as a kid, and when it skipped all the boring kids shows, that was usually, I want to say that was the first in the lineup of the night. That, along with shows like The Ripping Friends and whatnot, that really, really influenced a lot of what came after that.
Absolutely.
Particularly the filmmaking.
Okay, cool. And Ripping Friends, that was that John Kay?
Yes, it was.
Yeah, okay.
Yes, it was.
I thought so.
Very similar art style to Ren and Stimpy.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm the biggest fan of that.
And to Clone High, I noticed there's a lot of kind of 60s, early 70s influence creeping into that cartoon.
Absolutely, yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
In the art.
The art, for sure, is appropriate. I really like it. Mm-hmm. I love the art style on Clone High.
Yeah.
But so let's get into it. Episode 5 here, Sean. What's the title of the episode 5?
Episode 5's title is Sleep of Faith, La Rude Awakening.
Sleep of Faith. So, yeah, this
Sleep
is
of
faith.
In this Lots of staying up in this episode.
Yeah, it's a very special episode about being short of sleep.
Very serious issue that a lot of people deal with.
Yeah, you know, especially when you're studying for your big PXJTs.
Yep.
You know, hey, how did you do on your PXJTs in school, Sean?
I failed them immediately.
You failed them?
You had to become
a chemist?
Yeah, I had to become a chemist. It was terrible. It was the worst.
Terrible. Is really limiting.
Do they really matter? Do those tests really matter in the long run?
Well, what's the last test that you remember taking, Miguel? What's the last standardized test you remember taking?
That would probably be the grade 11 test in English.
Okay.
In high school.
Is that like a provincial exam?
And how did that go for you?
Yeah. I mean, to be honest with you, I was entirely too high throughout high school, so I don't remember.
So they don't mean a goddamn thing. Perfect.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was saying. Exactly. I managed to get through high school.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. And that's all that really matters.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Okay. Yeah. I don't think I ever took any provincial exams. I don't remember taking anything since like junior high. I don't remember it was the last time I had to fill in the bubble sheets and, you know,
number two pencils.
University.
That's important. You don't want to mess that up.
Number two pencil out. There's still something satisfying with that wooden pencil.
It's good.
Sharpening it. That's the only thing I hate about it is sharpening it.
It's kind of a
pain in the ass. Everything else is just perfect. It's got the
feel,
wood,
the grip.
It's got the wood.
Yeah,
all of it.
Yeah, that whole wood thing going for
it. It's got the wood and the lead inside it.
You know how wood always feels? Feels good.
Oh, yeah.
Unlike this, I'm holding a plastic pen right now, and I'm very unhappy about the whole situation.
I feel like a fraud holding these.
A little bit. I mean, permanent marks, guys. Come on.
Yeah.
What is this? The future?
This isn't what a writer holds.
No.
This is some sort of tool of a machine. This isn't an artist's
tool. Of the machine.
The machine.
Mm. Oh. Yeah.
May as well just be typing with a computer.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Might as well be.
Might as well have my leg chained to the desk.
Fetch my quill pen and my inkwell. I shall pen the missive of the day.
I screwed up on my last standardized test. It was all about when they were like, hey, because it was going to be like, what are you going to do with your future? And we're gonna suggest some careers to you that you'd be suited for based on these answers.
Right.
but I had said something like I screwed up before any of the questions were asked. I screwed up in like the demographic information when they're like, "And what do you think you're gonna do?" And I was like, "And it was like, do you want to go to college?" It was like university. This, like, all the different options. And I was like, technical college. That I'm a technical guy. That sounds like me. It was like, no, like you screwed up. So instead of it being like you should be a doctor or a lawyer, I got it back and it was like you should consider being a mechanic or a dental hygienist. I was like, no.
I feel like I screwed up my standardized test, and I still got like veterinarian. Yeah, so yeah. I'm gonna hold no credence to those tests.
My parents beat me for months.
Did they?
I got teacher. I think I got teacher when they kind of suggested careers to me, and I
think so too. Yeah,
I'd rather die.
Oh God, yes.
Oh, that's just something that they can tell.
Well, why don't you tell us about your teaching?
You know, some people should be teachers. The people,
absolutely, there are
people
some great that teachers
really
out there.
Believe in teaching and are dedicated to that and everything, but. The most people that go into teaching school just don't know what else to do, and they should not go to teaching school.
I find a lot of the, I took a few classes with in the university with education majors, and they seem to like to boss people around.
It's their skill set.
Yeah, that might be why they're going into education.
Yo, do this.
Yeah.
Tell me what the capital of Mississippi is.
Tell me what 2 + 2 is now.
No, it's Jackson. Screw you. You're failed.
If you don't read this entire book in a week, you're dead.
Yeah, yep. It's kind of like the same kind of power tripping that a cop has. If you don't have a gun and you only get to scream at children, like I guess it's like a consolation
prize.
You
could have a gun.
It's technically less dangerous than being a cop, but you know, if you were a cop, you can get a little more effective with your power trips.
Right.
I guess
a little less
know.
Dangerous than this. It could be as dangerous as going to jail for, you know.
Yeah. Okay, so but in this episode, everybody's got they're studying their big standardized test, their PXJTs. It's going to determine their whole lives.
Everyone's
their futures,
stressed.
Obviously,
Abe hasn't slept in days.
Abe is sacrificing his own sleep to be manipulated by Cleo, and
who's
also
stressed.
Well, everyone's stressed.
Everybody,
and you know,
and Gundy just decides, you know what? Screw the PXJTs. I'm going to be a trucker.
Yeah, I mean, Gandhi's so stressed about the PXJTs that he's looking for any escape at all. And the escape that he finds is with a mysterious trucker.
He's going to teach him about the real world.
Like you do. Yeah. You know, that's where I always seek out a mysterious trucker. And I also appreciate that we meet Gandhi's Jewish parents in this episode.
Is this for the first time? I can't.
This is the first time we've seen him.
And also we get the other story, our C story. Of the competition between Mr. Butlertron and Scangrade, his old
which
rival
escalates.
From college, which escalates throughout the episode. But those are kind of the things that are happening, and in the end, of course, it all gets tied together with a drag race for Cleo's attention.
For sure.
In that true 60s style.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Drag race.
It's when's the... But even... The teen shows in like the 80s and 90s did that.
Oh, yeah.
But it was probably just because it was like they were being written by the same people
grew
up on the stuff from the 60s
exactly.
and 70s.
The same 10 guys used it to pay for their house.
Yeah. Okay, so what should we do in this scenario, Kel? Let's have them do a drag race here.
Clearly.
And they'll win a bucket of fries.
Well, you
it
see
doesn't
guys,
matter at this point. It's
you
season
see guys,
8.
This was still all pre-computers.
Yeah,
that's true.
It was more like technology hadn't picked up quite so much in the same way. Whatever, drag races, stupid.
Hey, people who are fans of Fast and Furious would argue against you on that, but that's neither here nor there.
Well, yeah,
high.
Fast and Furious. Obviously, they're going to keep making those until it can't be done anymore.
Do you think the equivalent of that today, the drag race, would be like a hacking competition? Or like, who's better at computers or social media?
That probably exists
media
in some form, I imagine.
Like the parallel of that?
Oh, wow.
The modern day parallel?
I don't know.
It might still be drag racing.
I think it might still be drag racing.
That's kind of hard to be with, vehicles and whatnot.
Or just an old classic fist fight. That still settles man problems.
That's the old timey way to handle things.
A roustabout.
So Abe gets pretty much... bossed around by Cleo throughout the whole studying period.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And doesn't learn a damn thing at all. No matter how hard Abe tries, she just can't retain any knowledge or just flat out refuses to because Cleo's a terrible person.
Right, and throughout he's being encouraged by Joan to have some sleep.
Well, for sure, because she's dealt with sleep deprivation herself.
Which she finally does reveal.
She found herself in the gutter, wide awake.
Yeah. Just staying up all the time, skipping classes to stay awake. It's harsh, rough times.
So Abe's feeling peer pressure on both sides.
A little bit.
It seems. Yeah.
A little bit. He's torn as to what to do. He's a conflicted man.
He's not really. He doesn't even get manipulated by Cleo. It's like he volunteers for it.
Yeah,
you know?
For sure.
She doesn't have to do anything to manipulate this guy.
She just has to say JFK once, and he's like, "Oh no, I'll do it," and then it's all over for Abe.
She just has to be hot, essentially.
Yeah, I mean, well, yeah. Not a big stretch for her.
JFK's a real Reggie.
Yeah, definitely. Ugh,
it's a real Reggie. I don't like it. I don't care for JFK. He's a Reggie. He's a Zap Brannigan.
You don't care for the character?
He's a master of subtext.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really hard to decipher his subtext.
By far, one of the best lines in the episode was "Nothing bad ever happens to the Kennedys."
Yeah.
And then followed immediately by something where
he immediately rolls his car.
Yeah.
You know,
inexplicably. Like, it just happens.
Yes.
There's no...
For sure. And yeah, and that's, well, they were racing on Dead Man Slick Mountain Cliff Road.
That's true.
So him kind of tipping the whole beast over isn't entirely surprising. One joke that I had missed, I think, when I had listened to it previously, or when I watched it previously, was guaranteed Bravo Juliet. Did you catch that?
No. What?
The trucker's giving Gandhi his instruction, and he's like, he says the thing about
I got it.
You're heading to Chicago 400 miles and 50 miles an hour, and then a housewife leaves Boston heading west at 65 miles an hour. Well, that's a guaranteed Bravo Juliet in Topeka or whatever.
I missed that one. That's nice.
Yeah, the show doesn't shy away from making dick, fart, poop, and sex jokes.
It's true.
Regularly.
They're very present.
In addition to like fun historical things.
Yeah.
There's little things like at the beginning of this episode I saw scrawled like into like the side of a wall or something like Tesla rules.
He doesn't show up, does he? Or I think he does in one episode.
I think
maybe
he might.
I'm not even sure, but
a
it doesn't
lot of them
matter.
Show up as smaller characters.
His fingerprints are in the background,
true.
And I like the little things, the little knowledge that Tesla is running around somewhere. I don't even need to see him, but it's nice to know he's there.
Indeed.
It's good. And ScanGrade is enormous, but he needs to be plugged in. Like
he's gonna take over the world, Brett.
He's gonna take over the
world. Get off his game.
Based on the power of number two pencils.
Yeah, the lead from the number two pencils. I love when he spins around and the cord just kind of wraps.
Yeah. He's wrapping.
That's the best.
His cord.
They kind of have these great visual jokes throughout the entire show, and they're oftentimes very subversive in terms of what you're supposed to expect from a joke, like when Joan goes to check on Abe, who's supposed to have been sleeping, and she sees that the window's open, and then next to the window there is Abe's like outline just smashed through the wall.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're able to, you know, play with your expectations, certainly. And there's very well. I love in the next episode they do it really well. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I really like I'm not gonna step on Geshi in the next episode quite yet. But that's something else, man. I don't know. I like to think of the truck driver as like a what was his name? What did Gandhi again? Gandhi's
prep course.
Douglas prep course.
Yeah. Douglas prep course.
40 years.
Yeah.
He teaches him the ways of multiple choice.
And I like, yeah.
Yeah, it's about
it's a good story.
Multiple choices.
Yeah.
Oh, it's just terrible.
Can you get rid of two of the answers?
That one was definitely a groaner. That was a great groaner type
There's
joke.
So much groaning to happen in the Gandhi storyline in this episode.
I love it.
I have to say I love it as well.
I was a particular fan of groaners.
Yeah.
It's a groaner's paradise.
I really like the final showdown between ScanGrade and Mr. B when they have just like a BattleBot style showdown.
That's what I was trying to I was reaching for the name when I was writing down my notes, and I notice he comes out with like this flipping kind of
a shunt
scoop type thing. Yeah,
I think it's a shunt.
Yeah, and like it plays out like every BattleBot thing where the guy with that plow
just
wins immediately.
Yeah, that's it.
The wedge just flips over the other guy.
Yeah.
And then he pulls out the saw blade and he is very threatening with that.
Yeah.
On the old Mr. B.
But then Mr. B multiple choice logics his brain and he explodes.
Robots can't resist paradoxes.
That's right. You know, I think really the lesson to be learned here is that...
I don't think
there's... Don't succumb to peer pressure.
Go to sleep.
I mean, I was going to make some grand point about that multiple choice wasn't, you know, useless, that there was that there was some sort of skill or value that can be that we should be learning that hey, all those multiple choice tests we did, that wasn't a complete waste of our time, right? Yeah. That was a skill as applied to real life.
Overall, I guess they're trying to satire the notion that, you know, if you fail this test, your life will crumble.
Yeah. Right.
As well as the dangers of peer pressure. And I find that they did a good job of making fun of those episodes dealing with addiction and
Definitely.
Things like that.
Like the after school special type.
Yeah, absolutely.
You need an intervention, Abe.
Yeah, and he says, I don't have to listen to you.
I'll sleep when I'm dead.
Yeah, exactly.
You'll die if you don't sleep.
I mean, ultimately, that's one of the complete, that's probably the greatest virtue of that show. In general, it's just its ability to kind of make fun of shows like, I guess, Dawson's Creek and Degrassi in a very kind of surreal manner.
Degrassi is the most a very special episode of any show of all time.
Oh, yeah.
Like Clone High makes the joke that every episode is a very special episode. Yeah. Degrassi was every episode. Every episode someone has AIDS or commits suicide or gets bullied or gets touched by their
uncle.
Like,
this school should be shut down.
Comes out of the closet.
This school should be shut down.
Yeah. There's too much shit happening.
Populated by fucked up kids.
The inmates are running the asylum at Degrassi.
Yeah, yeah, clearly.
This Radich character has been screwing it up for years.
And what nobody has called them on it.
What community is this? Where are the parents?
Yeah.
They've all apparently died in fires and left these children to be raised by rapey uncles.
Yeah.
What is happening?
Maybe
teen pregnancy run epilepsy rampant.
I think it takes place in a sort of Mad Max kind of reality.
It
where
must.
They've,
There's
like,
no
been
way.
Forced to rebuild their own society, and like the only thing these kids know is school.
Mad Max Toronto.
Kind of creepy.
Yeah. They're all fighting for...
Just walk away from the school bell.
Is that too stereotypical?
There's no budget.
Yeah.
That's all. The premise of this show is there's no budget, and there are three depressed writers.
Yeah.
Wait, are we talking about Degrassi or Clone High now?
I think we're still talking about Degrassi.
Okay, perfect.
Could be talking about both.
Though I don't I don't pretend to know the status of the fellas at Clone High. They seem to be doing pretty well. I hope they're not depressed.
Yeah.
I definitely picked up some Thursday in the emo music watch.
Mm-hmm. Right.
We had some Dashboard Confessional in an earlier episode that certainly didn't escape me. And I definitely picked out some Thursday.
That's like the only Thursday song I know. So I also recognize it as a Thursday song.
They do a good job of picking out little instrumental parts. The pencil is a metaphor for Abe's life.
He drops it and it shatters.
That's right.
This him hitting rock bottom.
That's right. That's right, you guys.
Because he did. I get it.
Mm-hmm. But then it's okay.
I get metaphors.
Because when Abe and JFK face off, Abe comes to his senses and he tortoise and hares him.
Yeah, pretty much.
It's true.
Throws down a little
tortoises the hell out of him.
Little tortoise hare situation.
They do a good job of using very heavy-handed metaphors and making them funny.
So did nobody help JFK when he flipped over?
No.
They just left him in there?
All the rest
of the day.
They're
just like, well, whatever. Let's see what Abe does.
The rest of the day, and then through the night, through the night and into the next day.
Yeah.
Nobody's going to call a tow truck.
Classic cartoon joke, by the way.
They just left him there. Boom.
It's kind of a dick move, but I mean, whatever.
Yeah. Well.
Can't take it back now.
I guess he couldn't get out. He wasn't one of those walk away from car accidents.
Oh yeah, like those really common
walk
away.
You know, like a lot of times you get a minor
broken leg, just go walk it off.
Get a minor wreck and you walk away like a NASCAR driver,
right?
Sure. Like a boss.
Mm-hmm. Do some push-ups.
Yeah, exactly.
Right there.
Do a couple push-ups. Maybe a cartwheel.
Apparently, NASCAR drivers are just invincible.
Yeah.
They get in the worst wrecks, and then they just get off the train, and they get off the course, and they just fight each other immediately afterwards.
And then they just wave the crowd and
just,
do cartwheels.
I don't know. Are NASCAR drivers all just like rednecks made of rubber?
I was just going to say Hicks. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
rubbernecks?
Maybe.
Yeah.
Is there anything else you wanted to point out about this episode here, guys?
I don't know, just some off just some offhanded line, like lines taken out of context. Like, I'm getting the good news.
Yeah,
great line.
Gandhi's foster parents. Yeah,
yeah, absolutely. Staying up socially. I really like that. At first, I just started staying up socially. Crack me up. But no, other than that, no.
I have the dolphin watch.
I was gonna say
we
that's
did see
a dolphin watch.
We did see a dolphin on Joan's ankle.
That's right. That's
as a tattoo.
And what was the text?
The text was "What's up?"
Yeah,
that 20-year-old Budweiser
back.
Commercial.
Hashtag
was
bring
it
Budweiser?
Back. Yeah,
yeah.
I hope it was.
No, yeah, it was.
Hey, Budweiser. Man, what's happening? Yeah. Watching the game, having a bud. True.
Yeah.
True.
Hey guys, remember in the first Scary Movie where the Wayans brothers did that? But instead of saying drinking some bud, he said smoking some bud. That was a good pun. Let's weigh in on the weigh-ins.
That's a joke. That's weighing in on the weigh-ins.
Good times. So let's go to episode 6 then. Shalt we do episode 6? All right. Well,
what's the title of this episode, Sean?
Episode 6's title is Homecoming, A Shot in Dark.
Shot in the dark?
No, shot in dark.
You guys, do you get it?
I have to admit, I do not get it.
Oh.
Could someone spell it out for me?
It's a D apostrophe A-R-C.
Yeah, yeah, I get it.
Yeah.
I get it now.
Explain it to me.
but seriously, guys.
No, but I get it.
I get it
what?
Now.
What?
All right, so last episode was crap compared to this one, the announcer says.
Complete shit. They should
right
be ashamed.
This episode, I want to point out that we just finished covering Stella not long ago, and this episode reinforces something that Stella.
It bring back some Gary Meadows.
Yeah, exactly. The Gary Meadows action comes back in this episode. Really, it reminds us some of the ways in which Stella is cartoony, because now we're watching an actual cartoon, and it's using this, and it's like Stella used the same moves as this cartoon did at times. Like, oh, what's this? A mustache? Instant, complete disguise.
Yep.
I just want
no change in suits or anything, but
no. I think
maybe a bit of a voice change, but that's it.
Yeah, we open up on basketball. This is a basketball related episode.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, if Clone High had continued to be made, they would have run out of kind of some of these trope type episodes, right? Like, there's going to be the sports episode, the big game type episode,
for sure.
Right? Like, this is essentially like a Space Jam type episode of this show.
Pretty much,
with the way that Gesh gets characterized.
I was going to say, Gesh looks very much like the Space Mutants.
Yeah. Or like Space my Jam. Favorite episode of Futurama of all time. Time keeps slipping with the robot, with the super mutants.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Super mutants.
It's pretty interesting if it kept on going with, it would run out of tropes and eventually would have to become creative, and it would become too creative for its own good.
And when it would be canceled, probably.
Maybe it would lose its touch points.
Yeah.
It would cease to be satirical.
Yeah, and making fun of things that are not creative at all. Yeah,
interesting. So Gandhi is the, so Abe is the captain of the basketball team. Gandhi is the mascot, DNA Dan.
Just squeaks every time he walks.
Yeah, of course, we've got this rule that no girls or animals can play on the team.
It's been established.
So Joan puts on a mustache so she can pretend to be a dude. She throws down Lee Lemon style, and she joins the team. She leads the team. She steals the captaincy from Abe, even though she's really just trying to win Abe over.
Yep.
You know, trying to steer him
Poor
away
Joan just
from
can't
Cleo.
Win.
Her character is pretty clear.
Short.
Her objectives don't really change episode to episode.
Yeah.
Every episode, she's just trying to get with Abe. She
it's
wants
true.
Some Abe. Her tactics change, but her objective is always the same.
Just wanted Abe. To find a man who treats her right.
Well, no, she doesn't.
No, I want her to.
She does not want, but she doesn't want to find a man that treats her right.
Well, then she's beyond
because
help.
Because Abe is oblivious and he does
not
treat
not
her, right
her right
at all in any way.
Because he's too in love with Cleo.
There's got to be guys around who would treat you right, Joan, even though your hips are all weird. No one cares that you're
strong, and you have an
that your
face.
Waist that your waist connects to your hips on one side, and that your face is so very angry
and angular. Her chin is very very sharp.
She's
very
a Picasso.
Angular show.
Yeah,
there's a lot of angles. She's a Picasso.
That's true. Yeah,
In a lot of ways.
Everyone does look like a Picasso painting.
Most of them do.
A little bit.
They're very strange. But Abe, I think Abe describes himself as 140 pounds in this.
Yeah.
So I submit that he's probably about 6'5 and like 140 pounds. Yeah. Like he's just like, he's going to blow away.
Hey, he's 16. That's possible, maybe.
Yeah.
But yeah, the B story is that they've got to play this big game against Gesh.
Who are set up like the Nazis.
Gesh are like a fascist team of supermen.
Or the Monstars.
Or very similar.
Monstars,
earlier from Space Jam.
Very similar. And then we also have the other story so of between the two principals of the schools and Gandhi, because Gandhi, of course, is our mascot and our prankster character. And so because we're doing a big game school rivalry episode, he has to take the role of the person who's going to steal the other team's mascot, right?
And poop in it.
He's the comic relief amongst the comic relief.
Yeah. Very well put.
Yeah.
He's the weirdest of them.
I'm a pretty smart guy, Brett.
And, yeah, so he goes to kidnap Geshi, and everyone learns valuable lessons. This episode just reminds me that when, no matter what else is happening, we are observing a masterclass in being Will Forte and appreciating Will Forte.
Oh, yeah.
This is a great Will Forte show. Mm. His voice acting is so good.
And they use him absolutely everywhere.
Yeah. You know, like honestly, I am inspired by Will Forte. This show, every time I see him, I'm like, I wish I want to be more like. I strive to be more like Will Forte every day. And this show is definitely driving that point home for me.
Mm-hmm.
I need to be more like Will Forte, the Falconer.
That's just good advice for anybody, really. Be like Will Forte. Yeah. Just do it.
Whatever you're doing, do it more like Will Forte would do it.
And they do use his, I should point out that they do use that exact same kind of intro voice the last time on Very Special Clone High. They used that in 22 Jump Street, directed by Phil Lord and Chris Miller.
That's right, right. Okay. At the very beginning.
At the very beginning. Right.
Yeah.
Preface it with his voice.
Tidbit.
Mm-hmm. Good times.
Excellent.
So, yeah, Joan of Arc becomes a disguised basketball player. And starts kicking ass, and starts gaining the attention of both Cleo and JFK.
Well, yeah, I mean, she puts there's a lot of parallels we made between the Futurama episode where Leela joins the army.
Mm-hmm.
JFK is put in the same position as Zap Brannigan in that episode, where he's sexually confused by the mustachioed new recruit.
He's attracted. They could have done at least one more beat about that, one more joke,
right?
About him being confused with John Dark's.
I would have,
body and how he feels about it. It was hilarious.
Yes.
They could have played it up a little bit more.
Sure. All we got was a couple of lame, like,
it wasn't lame. I found it funny.
Okay, no. The Will and Grace stuff was lame, where he's like, I guess I'll watch Will and Grace.
Wow.
I was like, well, although that could have been
a channel metaphor, I
if
think.
If those
was,
were the only.
That was funny.
The channel one was fine.
The metaphor was great.
Fine.
With a heavy-handed metaphor, I should say.
Yeah.
But there could have been, I don't know, there could have been some more. Yep. Yeah, I would have appreciated more humor down that line as well. But he's being sexually confused. I don't know. Sean, Miguel, what man makes you most sexually uncomfortable?
It's kind of a cop-out answer, but I'd say Justin Bieber. He's so feminine looking and slender.
Okay.
So
he makes you uncomfortable because he's womanly looking.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm coming to terms slowly with it, though.
Okay.
That I kind of want, to be inside him.
Yeah, yeah. There's no men that make you sexually uncomfortable with their manliness.
Oh, like how manly they are.
Well, I'm asking, like, I guess what I'm learning here is that Miguel is made more sexually uncomfortable by a man's femininity than by his masculinity.
Yeah.
So, Sean, what now for you? Is it the same, or is it more like you're more intimidated by masculinity?
Not even sexual masculinity, but just overall fitness. Like Jack LaLanne. Jack LaLanne scares the hell out of me. I mean, he's dead, but he still scares the hell out of me.
But the question was, does Jack LaLanne make you sexually uncomfortable?
No, I guess not. Well, no.
Let me put it this way. Are you a Burt Reynolds or a Bowie?
Probably a Burt Reynolds.
Yeah. The masculinity.
Like, So it's like just like proximity to someone who's all like shredded up. The closer you are to them, the more uncomfortable you are.
Mm-hmm.
But is that just self-consciousness?
A little bit.
Or is, yeah. is it sexual uncomfortable?
It could be
sexual.
A Max situation.
Sexually awkward.
Sexually charged.
Where he's like, what if there's like this man, he's just like, he's like muscular and musky. And,
right,
and
then just oiled up.
He can barely move his neck.
Oozing.
Does he make you sexually awkward? Sexually.
He carries a bottle of olive oil everywhere.
Right. I'm going to be honest. There might be one or two, like, just like.
I feel like Sean's dodging the question. Like he has an answer to what man makes him most sexually uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And he's trying to avoid telling us that it's like Nick Frost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right. I'm a bear kind of guy.
Chubby
just
chaser.
Tell us.
Yeah.
Tell us who makes you sexually uncomfortable.
What about you, Brett?
Yeah, Bill you, Cosby. Brett? Bill Cosby makes me incredibly sexually uncomfortable.
Topical.
Oh, snap.
Topical.
Well, this won't come out for another like
this
5 years.
Edgy, topical
humor. Guess what?
He'll
still be a rapist.
That's true.
Yeah.
He'll still have been a rapist in the future. Allegedly.
Yeah, allegedly.
Times 40.
Yeah.
When they allegedly gets to like, well, 35 people are alleging smoke, fire.
Yeah, that's what I was like. I don't want to, you know, undercut what all these women are coming up and saying, but isn't it? There has to be some, you know, pretenders to the throne, right?
Yeah. Still kind
I
of
imagine
a, still kind of a
cop
out answer, though. I could go either way. Ryan Gosling's femininity would make me sexually uncomfortable. And
really? I think he's a perfect blend of feminine
honestly,
and masculine.
I think that if
he's pretty massive. I wouldn't say he's feminine.
I don't know. I think that if Ryan Gosling sat down right here next to me where Sean is sitting, I think I would be comfortable having a beer with him or putting my arm around him.
Right.
I think
I can see that.
I think I could.
Yeah.
I think I could spoon with Ryan Gosling completely platonically.
Right.
And we would just be bros, but he'd be the prettier bro.
Right.
Well, obviously.
I mean, he's always going to be the pretty bro.
I haven't seen
unless we could clone Ryan Gosling and have two Ryan Goslings.
Oh, snap.
Oh, if only could we do well, we don't want to start manufacturing Goslings. If we start doing that, if we take this clone high thing to its conclusion and start manufacturing Goslings, it's going to put the rest of us to shame.
We
listen,
played God.
I haven't been born I wasn't born a Gosling, and no offense, you guys weren't born Goslings. If we start pumping out Goslings by the thousand,
that's bad for us.
Exactly.
That's
exactly.
It's going to homogenize the gene pool. Is what's going to happen. We're all going to be, our children are going to be Goslings.
Well, that'll be what happens at first.
We're all going to be super handsome and devoid of all personality outside of our films.
No, you're wrong. You're wrong. At first,
right.
We're all outcompeted by the Goslings, right?
Okay.
But over time,
is it going to become hip to see guys who aren't
the
Goslings?
Thing. The norm, when the
oh,
norm,
snap. So yeah.
when
eventually
the
win.
Norm becomes Goslings, right. all of a sudden, that's. Right. That then it tips in the other direction.
And that's when we get all the hot punk rock chicks.
That's
right.
And then the non-Goslings, are look attractive again.
Yeah.
When all you just in the land of the Goslings, the man with a half a Gosling is king.
Yes. Of getting ass.
So that wouldn't take place for another, like, what, 15 years?
You could get ass if you were like a one-legged, one-eyed Ryan Gosling.
Yeah, well, I was just going to say a Gosling.
You get double ass.
Yeah, the ugly Gosling.
Ooh. He's developed personality.
Yeah. I haven't seen enough of his movies, but he seems completely devoid of personality outside of his films. Like, he's a great actor, but it's almost like he's a blank slate of a human being.
I think he, like, as a director, you'd want to work with Ryan Gosling because you're just like, well, I can put whatever clothes I want
to
on him.
He would be a sponge. He would just absorb this character.
You can just put him wherever you want
right.
to, and it'll be good.
But if you know you're just like, hey, let's go get drinks after, and he's like, yeah, I'll join you. You'd be like, oh, actually, I gotta go home. I don't really.
Yeah, me and the camera guys actually.
we're gonna go home.
I'm gonna shoot the shit with the real creative people. Wardrobe and I have some discussions to have.
Yeah, we're going to do some, we're going to look at some rushes.
So, Geshi, I want to talk about Geshi.
Yeah, Gandhi and Geshi get along well.
Easily the highlight of the episode.
Yeah,
I mean, sure.
We've got this plot that's fairly predictable with John Dark and JFK's sexuality and usurping Abe's place on the team and all that. That's fairly predictable. There's some good jokes. But really, for me, the big payoff in this episode is Gandhi's misadventures with Genghis Khan in pursuit of Geshi.
Oh, my God.
They kidnap Geshi. What do they hit him? They just, like, knock him out and drag him away, right?
Yeah.
Well, they offer him some speakers in a van, and then they push him in.
Just push him into the van. Yeah. And it's incredibly disturbing that there's a zipper on Geshi, first of all.
A little bit.
And when
they open it, it's just like
more guts than could fit in that side. Yeah. It's like the TARDIS. Like, there's more guts just inside than from the outside. The but somehow they cram all that back in there and zip him back up, and he's fine. And they go on all sorts of adventures with the monster Geshi. And they give him candy, and then...
and then Gandhi lets him go.
Gandhi just can't. He can't.
He just can't take care of him anymore.
It's unfair to Geshi to have him hemmed in, to have him caged up and in possession of the Clone High.
Like some kind of monster.
Yeah, so he sets him free. Geshi immediately goes and starts killing all the animals it can find.
Yeah.
And not even just eating them, just like chomping their heads off. And what is there, like a squirrel? It bites off its head and it's like starts squeezing like its body.
Yeah. That's the highlight is him ripping a moose's face off.
Sucking the face off of a moose as though drinking with a straw.
Yeah. It was a cut from Gandhi going, I wonder if Geshi is okay. Yeah. And then he's just ripping a moose's face off.
Drinking off a moose's face. Yeah. Moose, no reaction.
Yeah. Moose does not give a shit, apparently.
The moose no sells his face being drunk off. Yeah.
He also skewers like three birds in a nest.
Baby birds,
right.
He gives him like the T-1000 with the
Yeah, he does. A little bit.
I have a question for you guys. That whole sequence in a lot of this episode in the latter half, or in the latter third, I should say, contains a lot of gory humor, which I find is kind of almost being overused now in late night cartoons.
Mm.
Do you think now this is hacky when watching it, or is it remain fresh?
This was really funny. I honestly feel the same way. I thought that this might be the funniest surprising gore in any cartoon.
You don't expect it. Like something with Happy Tree Friends is just excess.
Yeah, or if it's like Super Jail.
Metalocalypse.
Yeah. Or
Super Jail is ridiculous. Yeah, but I also like Super Jail a lot.
But like when you look at that stuff, the gore is over the top. And in this one, like the animals aren't screaming and stuff too. It's just like, the moose doesn't even react. Yeah. Like it's just like this. So in that way, it's not realistic gore. It's absurd gore.
No, yeah, exactly.
You know, and in that way, I can still really enjoy it. I don't like it on Game of Thrones when like Catelyn Stark cuts somebody's throat or whatever. Like that's not what I'm into. What other things should we let women and animals do?
Shouldn't or should?
Should. Like apparently, we should let them play basketball.
Well, I guess we can let them vote. and I guess we can let them drive.
Women or animals?
Animals.
Like, I'm all for giving bears driver's licenses.
Yeah.
But totally. Women? I mean, I guys, let's use our heads.
Yeah. You can cut off a bear and come out relatively unscathed, but...
You can shoot a bear.
Yeah.
I don't know. I got nothing. That was weird. Got a better question.
Okay.
What would you dress as a woman to infiltrate? Okay? It's
that's a good one. That's a good question.
It could be any point in your life. Right. You could reimagine yourself as Jonathan Brandis in Ladybugs. Maybe you need to dress as a little girl to play soccer. Mm-hmm. Or Jonathan Brandis in Sidekicks. Right. And you just need to grow your... I just want to make Jonathan Brandis jokes. He killed himself. So what would you dress as a woman? What would you dress as a woman to infiltrate? Like if you moved to New York City and you needed a rent controlled apartment and your roommate was Peter Scolari, would you be the star of Bosom Buddies and your name would be Tom Hanks?
I was just gonna say that.
Like what circumstances would force you into drag?
Not being able to play full contact rugby.
Yeah,
I think
you're a real rugby enthusiast, Sean.
big rugby enthusiast. I don't show it on the podcast or anything because I like to keep it on the down low. But yeah, what I'm willing to do, get a wicked perm for this hair, wicked hair, infiltrate it that way, and just work my way up the ranks.
Is that because you... Why? Why do you love women's rugby? Is it because...
I want to play rugby, but I don't want to get too injured. Like, I'm sure I'm going to get injured playing with women, but I don't want to, like, break a leg, you know?
You don't want to go the women however many rounds women with Ronda Rousey, right?
Way more hardcore. Right.
No, I would never want to fight Ronda Rousey.
Yeah.
That's insane.
Her name almost sounds like Roundhouse. Like, you could rearrange a few letters
and easily.
Make it sound like Roundhouse.
It might as well be Roundhouse.
Yeah.
You know, the world champion, Roundhousey.
Yeah.
It's funny because she won't kick you. She doesn't kick you. She doesn't kick you.
She just
beats you to
death. She just beats you to death and makes you buy dinner.
What would you dress in drag with to infiltrate?
I'd like to be like an androgynous rock star. Kind of like I said, Bowie
some
earlier.
Bowie action.
And some 80s kind of like hair metal type thing. Just be like very androgynous. Okay. Mainly because I just like to lead men on.
Okay.
Yeah. And break their hearts.
Okay. That's
but not
cool.
Before taking a little bit of money.
No, yeah. And getting chicks.
Yeah.
Getting chicks.
Cool.
How about yourself, Brett?
Cool bros.
Yeah.
Oh.
You're dishing out all these questions.
Yeah.
Well, I'm trying to give us something to talk about here.
Right.
I don't know. I don't think I would do it for athletics. You know, it wouldn't be like an athletics thing.
Right.
You know, like I don't think that's really gonna. That's kind of. That's kind of like a Johnny Knoxville movie or something. Like,
oh yeah, that's The Ringer 2. That's what The Ringer 2 is going to be.
He just dresses in drag,
right?
And tries to make.
We
got to
win money from the World Cup or something,
dude. Yeah. You're 50. You can't make the WNBA. Yeah.
Plus, it'd be some weird parallels between the Special Olympics and the WNBA.
Yeah, it would get very uncomfortable.
People would be
get very uncomfortable.
In hysterics.
Listen, they can't dunk, but the fundamentals are good.
Right.
You put the fun in fundamentals.
I would dress in drag for maybe like a cosplay or something.
Mm-hmm.
Cosplay as like She-Hulk.
Yeah. Or like one of the
I've got the build to play She-Hulk, you know?
Yeah, or Chun-Li from Street Fighter.
Yeah.
No,
that's a sexy one. Where's Chun-Li?
One of the Mortal Kombat characters.
I don't have the slender enough frame for a lot of the
I bet you could wear those little pigtails.
Slave Leia.
What does she wear on those
slave
pigtails?
Leia,
those
like,
they're like
slave
hair
Leia,
puffs
slave
or something?
Leia.
They look like doilies.
they pretty much are doilies, but like for hair.
So, but if I do Slave Leia, I'm not going to, like, shave any of my body hair.
Why would you?
You guys.
Right.
So, it might, like, people might not enjoy it that much.
Right. I highly doubt people wouldn't enjoy that.
Just, like, curly auburn chest hair.
I'll make you a deal. If you go as Slave Leia, I'll go as Jabba the Hutt.
Nice.
That makes me incredibly uncomfortable.
And I'll...
I'd rather at least be like a free agent solo Slave Leia than actually like chained to anyone.
To a Jabba.
Like that's a little bit too far for me as a woman. Like I'm willing to cosplay as a woman, but
you're
I'm not
that kind
willing,
of lady.
But I'm not willing to sacrifice my
you're not that kind of girl.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm no 50 Shades of Grey bottom. You know, you're not going to be
power bottom.
You're not
Anastasia
gonna,
Steele.
You're not gonna chain me up or beat me down to get me off.
Yeah.
No.
Unless you have billions of dollars,
but
franchise has taught us.
But I might slave Leia choke you out for my own enjoyment.
Oh yeah.
Ah, there we go. Little breath play with Jabba the Hutt.
Nothing will stick in my mind.
Oh my god.
As powerfully as Jabba the Hutt's face when he's dying and his tongue going back and
lolling about.
Ugh. Lovely.
My last, I got a couple, you know, we don't even have time for any games here today.
Okay.
I have one more question before we get to the MVP, and that are, what do you think the implications are of there being a clone state? It's referenced in the, at least in episode 5, maybe in episode 6 as well,
right.
that Cleo for sure is trying to get to clone state.
Yeah.
Now, I think that implies that there's more than one high school filled with clones,
mm-hmm.
that it would warrant a university.
Right.
I don't know, man. What's like? What are the implications for this world if there is a clone state?
I'm gonna go sinister on this one. They're raising the next future leaders who are going to be put into place. We're gonna have like a puppet kind of government type situation if there is a clone state. These people are being educated to rule the world and strip us of our civil liberties.
That sounds about right. I mean, the shadowy, the board of shadowy figures, they're always talking about some like some sinister plan with the clones. Like, why don't they know martial arts yet? Or why don't they know everything? So that
fits
in well.
Sleeper agents or something.
Yeah.
I'd like to think that like each state has its own clone high.
Right.
Or, or maybe it just each state has its own super school. Like Gesh is from the next state over.
Yeah.
Like one state
the
has
creepy
clone.
Nazi kind
yeah,
of
like there's like
Ubermensch.
Like yeah, there's
high
some
school.
Sort of there's some sort of a different, strange, sinister government program developing a high school in each state.
Yeah.
I think I'd like that. And then but then I wanna see like a March Madness of all those schools.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely.
And then we'd probably get Space Jam, like a real life version of Space Jam.
That's its own show.
Then we can sing that
and
Space Jam
song. It's
just
like Smash TV.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The show, the cartoon.
Pretty much.
With super schools. I don't know. Yeah, sure. That's me. I'm just talking. So, I don't know. I think that the idea of clone state bothers me.
Yeah.
It's very
is dark.
At least disturbs you.
There's a lot of disturbing.
There's a darkness on the horizon with
that's
that
the
clone
thing.
State.
It's going to happen.
This show is similar in Adventure Time in that there's like a lot of unspoken darkness just kind of implied
it
off
just
of screen.
It blankets the entire world.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. No, it's
that's what's great about it.
There's just sort of a sinister cynicism that just kind of hangs in
and
the
air. Yeah, and that's probably what stuck with me over the years. It's just kind of, it has this weird, even though it's very funny and very, you know, satirical in a lot of ways, it's also quite haunting in some ways.
Definitely.
Yeah, like totally. Citizen Kane type of haunting. Yeah.
It sticks with you.
Yeah.
Nice.
Absolutely.
Who is the, what character, Sean, we're going to put you on the spot first. Which character of these two episodes, who are you picking for MVP?
I'm going to go with Joan of Arc for these two.
Oh, you're switching your tune.
I'm switching my tunes.
Picking Gandhi the last couple times.
I know. I feel like we got to know a little bit more about Joan of Arc. We found out she had a very debilitating sleep deprivation addiction, I guess. Mm-hmm. Got some awful tattoos in the process. And then in the last episode, in A Shot in Dark, she's the head of the talk of the town. She's the big basketball player that brings them all to victory.
Absolutely.
And so I'm going to go Joan of Arc.
Cool. And again, just very quickly, we got the dolphin sound a few times, and then we finally see the dolphin.
And we see a dolphin in the mustache.
There's a bench player that's a dolphin in a mustache.
Yeah. Gary Meadows style.
Yes.
Yeah. And Miguel, who's your MVP?
I would say Gandhi. Gandhi and to a lesser extent, Geshi. just because mainly I'm a sucker for comic relief, even if it's in a comedy. I'm... purely comical in that sense. I'm pretty pure and uncut in that way, Brett. I do enjoy just how he mainly just his reaction to watching American Pie. That's what got me for the first time. Him just, why is he looking at that pie funny? Oh no, we didn't. And it, like, just kills me. Just hilarious because that is maybe one of the worst movies I've ever seen.
It's pretty bad.
I don't really like the American
Pie
films.
It's the first DVD I ever purchased.
Really?
Yep.
Wow.
The very first DVD I ever bought was American Pie.
That's probably
it was Brazil for me. I was a hip kid.
Screw you, Miguel.
I got
buying Brazil for your first DVD. I think like my first DVDs were seriously like American Pie, and then like the first one I got that was respectable was probably like Full Metal Jacket.
Yeah.
I think I bought that one pretty early on, and that was probably the first one that was like, okay.
Was that one of like the first DVDs?
It was pretty early. I bought that and The Shining, and they were both in these. Yeah.
I'm trying to think of like some of the earliest DVDs. I know Goodfellas was one, and one that sticks out particular is The Thing. It was like one of the first kind of DVDs to come out, and when you actually had to like flip the DVD if the movie is too long. Like that's my copy of my DVD.
That's
copy
like Laserdisc style.
Yeah, that's my copy of Goodfellas. I have to flip it halfway through.
Really?
The one I have on
DVD. Know what? I think I have that same copy.
Now it's on Netflix. So
wow. Well, yeah.
It much now easier. It's obsolete.
It's crazy. Yeah, exactly. I've got shelves full of DVDs. It's like, why?
Just don't even watch them anymore.
Why?
Yeah.
Why did I ever do this?
Yeah.
And then,
you're caught up
and then
there it makes you look smart, I guess, and to then have there a were, big yeah, DVD collection.
Yeah.
And then there were years where you'd like where I would back up my stuff. And it's like you got a binder full of blank DVDs that have been burned that are also now useless.
Yeah.
Yep.
We're living in the future, folks. Little shows.
Wait, who's your MVP?
Oh, Geshi. 100%. Geshi is only in one episode. I'm giving Geshi the. I love Geshi so much that I'm giving Geshi the MVP for the one episode.
Perfect.
I might even give Geshi the MVP for the entire series just for this one episode.
I might have to agree with you.
Just for that 2 seconds of Geshi drinking a moose's face.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Is that might be the most inspired frames of comedy I've seen in a while. Oh, that's a great. Absolutely. I just loved this. It wouldn't be the same without the setups to it, but and the cutaway, but it's just it's so great. So I'll give
testament.
It to that.
Perfect.
And I'll say that's where I'm laying it down on this one.
Miguel, thank you for joining us.
Thanks
for
joining us,
thank
Miguel.
You for having me.
Check us out, littleshowspod.com, of course, at littleshowspod on Twitter, at Sean Stewman,
that's
at
me.
Brett Mad.
That's
Miguel,
me.
What's your Twitter?
I don't have Twitter, but you can look up Hench Life on YouTube. That is where me and my filmmaker buddies make films, predominantly comedies.
Hench
cool.
Life.
Yeah, on YouTube. Look it up.
Miguel McKenna on YouTube.
Check it out.
Yeah, we'll be back with another hot slice of Clone High, episodes 6 and 7 next.
Oh.
7 and 8.
Wait, did I say 6 and 7?
You said 6 and 7.
Yes.
7 and 8. Episodes 7 and 8 of Clone High are next.
Boom.
Toodles.